I'm Frank Vaughn. It's August 25th, 2026, and we're going to start where we left off yesterday. Or at least I think we're beginning today's video where we left off yesterday. I couldn't tell you how I ended yesterday's video. This is a free plug for Canada Spends on X. If you're not following them, I'm amazed they only have 15,000 followers because they just post charts. Good charts, I would allege. And this is a free plug for them. I want to go down here and just look at this. Our federal spending in one graph, because I made the case yesterday. Mark Carney has to get a bunch of our liabilities off the books somehow. And these are our liabilities. And we talked a lot about finance operations and others, National Defense Departments, and how he's looking for savings of 15%, and he's reducing the size of the federal workforce. And how that paves the way for austerity, even as they introduce an austerity budget after they won an election campaigning on pain. They're delivering their promises now. But we have old age security. That's a net liability. And even though MAID services successfully get rid of 1 in 20 people, that's responsible for 5% of overall Canadian deaths every year, in an attempt to try and get this off the books. So you work your whole life, you pay into taxation, and now we're going to encourage you at the first sign of discomfort, this is where they want to get to, at the first sign of discomfort, to just off yourself. So they want to collect the taxation and then not return the benefit when you're 65. A lot of these are very hard to deal with. This one under here, it's behind my shoulders, it's $52.1 billion. That's the Canada Health Transfer. That's how they get their hooks into a provincial jurisdiction, which is healthcare. But by providing that funding, they can dictate terms on how that funding is distributed. We have children's benefits. We have Indigenous services transfers, employment insurance. But anyway, we don't need to break it down because right up here, we just have transfers and benefits, 66% of the federal budget. We'll call that caring and sharing. Caring and sharing, that is, with other people's money. I just want to make note of, over on the side, there's Jimmy Goodtimes. He says, we can't cut them off. It's not their fault the government is inept. And this is what you're going to find over and over and over again online. So we'll go here. Brian Brugette. What the hell is even this? The CPC wants to raise OES and provide a tax cut, but only for seniors. This is that lack of choice we have right now. The only thing politicians know how to do is spend more of your money to try and buy votes. This is it. They don't have any vision. They're not bold. They don't lead. They don't try and convince the electorate that they're of a plan to try and right the ship of the country or to try and salvage things. They just tell you more what they think you want to hear, and the future be damned. For your children and for the nation, doesn't matter. That's how we've arrived at a place where our politicians have sold the country out, sold our sovereignty out with the support of the public for 50 years, and all of a sudden we're outraged because Donald Trump is president. Pretty wild. And I'm a critic of the Trump administration. You can't deny that. You can be both things at the same time, but I digress. The main point is, not only does government and political parties, not only do they not have solutions, they don't have solutions that the public will accept. Everybody recognizes something is wrong, but nobody wants to see their personal benefits cut. You can't have solutions without cuts to liabilities. Here we are. Canada announces dollar-for-dollar counter-tariffs against the U.S., $7.5 billion in support for workers and businesses. Remember that deficit I was talking about yesterday? Well, that $7.5 billion is just coming out of thin air, being borrowed against your children's future to support workers and businesses, and God knows how that's going to work out, during a trade war that is highly avoidable. Look, I read a bunch of conditions yesterday. Let's just revisit the main theme of reading those conditions. Canada has sold its sovereignty out. We are a legitimate security risk to the United States and to the continent. We're overrun by influence of the CCP. They do all kinds of dirty, skeevy things on our soil, and we do very little or nothing about it. And the Americans aren't about to sit idly by and watch Canada become a beachhead for nations that it is identified as strategic adversaries. By the way, So too did Carney when he accidentally told the truth during the debates. Or it was debates. It was plural. There wasn't enough of it. But during the debate, he was asked, what is Canada's number one security risk? And what did he say? China. So he knows. The Americans know. And everybody around the world, as I've highlighted in many videos, knows how overrun Canada is with foreign influence. Even our own government knows. They covered it up for 100 years. That's your Hague report for you. At any rate, this is just the beginning. Here's a summary today as it sits today. These initial surveys and summaries of the consequences of the Canadian government's decision to put the interests of dairy, to put the interests of the cartels in this country, to put the interests of those who override our country with their foreign influence ahead of everybody else, tens of thousands of jobs, half a point of GDP, and that's before we start printing, as Canada-U.S. trade war by the numbers. So it goes through a bunch of charts, and I'm telling you right now from reading this article as I did, 87,000 jobs could be lost. Economists, you need to understand that this is just the initial assessment. The damage will be far worse than this. There will be cascading effects if it goes on. I mean, you've got Doug Ford out there. So if you want to understand Doug Ford, let me just put this out there. If you know anything about geopolitics, you understand the relationship between Vladimir Putin and Dmitry Medvedev. Medvedev is the one that goes out in public and says outrageous things. And then Vladimir Putin is the one that goes out in public and reframes those outrageous things in a very diplomatic way. Good cop, bad cop. Well, if Mark Carney is Putin, Doug Ford is Medvedev, Reagan would be throwing up. All of a sudden, the Canadian public absolutely hates conservatives, is deifying Reagan and applauding Doug Ford, who is no Reagan conservative. He's spending Ontario into the ground and having press conferences where he's telling the U.S. president to kiss his ass and once again saying that we're willing to cut off electricity to 1.5 million Americans, which would be a literal, by the definition of the legal term, a crime against humanity over what? A trade dispute. It's almost like Groundhog Day, Canadian Economy Edition or Canadian Trade Edition, because we're having the same conversation that I was having back in April, May of 2025. If we go back there, I don't know if you go through my library, you'll find where we had a lot of these conversations already. That Canada is losing its mind about being called out for being a legitimate security risk, losing its mind for being called out for the incredible trade deficit that we run with the United States, where $60 billion U.S. dollars come into this country every single year. That's capital we desperately need as they absorb surplus goods that we make. Well, now we're trying to upset that apple cart. Now we're going back to battle with the United States. And the sad thing is, Tracy Wilson over the CCFR made an observation yesterday that Doug Ford is looking to secure his fourth term majority by playing to Ontarians who absolutely love to hate the United States and feel like they're superior to the United States. And it might actually work, because the opposition leaders in Ontario are just milquetoast. They make Doug Ford look good. Now, before I move on, I'll just leave you with this one thought from a guy named John Flynn. I follow him. He doesn't even follow me. Housing data and hard truths. Went to a barbecue yesterday. Half the people were from Niagara Falls, Canada. The other half from Niagara Falls, United States. Everyone got along. No one talked about tariffs. We had Canadian booze and American booze. You couldn't tell who was who. Like it or not, we are one. We are the North in North America. We share this continent, and we are separated from the rest of the world by two oceans that make the logistics of replacing the United States as a trading partner completely impossible, and allowing America's adversaries to set up shop on our soil only means that at some future date, the United States will have to kinetically deal with us. And even if they get their asses handed to them in the Middle East, and they voluntarily exit the Pacific, which is what I think they are doing, and they bring the empire home, they're going to be focusing on the hemisphere, and Canada is not prepared to fight a war with the United States. Even if we were, they're a nation of 400 million people. They work better for us as peers than as competitors. We are a nation of 40 million. 7 million of them can barely speak English at this point. And we're one great big security threat. We should probably try and fix that. But I want to move on to something else, and that is a world map of wheat exports. Canada, United States, Argentina, Russia, Ukraine, France, Australia, Germany, Romania, on and on and on. These are the exporters, and then there's the importers. In the Black Sea, I believe this is the article, global wheat buyers brace for supply squeeze amid Black Sea attacks. So in effect, there was a moratorium on Russia or the Ukrainians hitting each other's ports that handled grain exports. And then the Ukrainians broke that unspoken pact. And now they're attacking each other's shipping traffic as well as their port facilities. And Black Sea shipping of precious grains is up in smoke. Now, the world has changed a lot. And one of the nations, just as a for instance, forgive me if I'm a bit disjointed today. I was up late last night and up very early this morning. One of the nations that faces the greatest risk of disruption is Egypt. Now, if you're like me, this happened to me a long time ago, I was surprised many years ago to learn that Egypt was a net wheat importer. And the reason I was surprised is that I've had my head and my nose buried in history books my entire life. And I understand that Egypt, over the course of history, has been a net grain exporter. In fact, they enabled the entire Roman welfare state. And for those of you who don't know, Rome had a grain dole. And that grain was given freely to Roman citizens. And over the course of time, that grain dole expanded to include more and more people that, for whatever political reasons, Roman leadership needed the allegiance of those people, so they expanded the grain dole right alongside the devaluation and the inflation of their currency. The, the debasement, reducing the amount of silver that was in their dinars at the same time as the grain dole was increasing. Egypt was crucial to holding the empire together. The loss of Egypt for the empire was one of those things that signaled its inevitable demise, because they had trouble. They could not feed themselves without Egypt. Well, now Egypt cannot feed itself without the imports of the world. And they're not alone. Net importers, net countries that net import represent billions upon billions of people. And so we have weekly Black Sea grain seaborne exports on a clear downward trajectory. We have European farmers facing unprecedented crisis after successive heat waves. The British are openly talking about famine in Great Britain. I told you yesterday, I believe it was in yesterday's video, how the British were in deep trouble, how they hold American treasuries and blah, 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 a bunch of financial jargon that maybe nobody even understands. But the British are in big trouble because of their spending. They're in big trouble because of the cultural enrichment they've unleashed upon themselves. And they're in big trouble because of this drought. And so is Europe. Now, Europe exports a lot of grain. Also, the river systems, which the Germans and many people in mainland Europe depend on, like the Rhine River, are at record low levels. Shipping is disrupted. Not just of food, but all kinds of other critical materials that are undermining the economy. And then you had the fertilizer shortage, which was created by the stupidity of the Iran war, caused many nations to under-fertilize their crops, which means even if ideal growing conditions, heat and moisture, prevail, yields will be down anyway. The headline is, U.S. farm weather turns costly as drought and flooding threaten 2026 yields, as I've talked about before. It's not just what's in the ground already. It's that if you lose the agricultural draw from Lake Mead and Lake Powell, I saw somebody in the comments section which was like, I've been hearing this for years, that it was the impending collapse. And it's never happened and it's never going to happen. And it's like, man, when people are warning you, including myself, that there is a big, large-scale disaster coming, oftentimes the whole point of a warning is to give you some notice. And sure, in the natural oscillations of moisture being contributed by rain, numbers are going to go up and they're going to go down, but the trend is downward. And now we're at a point where you can't just shrug it off anymore. This isn't like 3 years ago. It was like, hey, there's a problem coming, and it's a few years down the road. Now we're at, hey, there's a problem coming, and it may materialize before the end of this dry spell. Like it may, when we come into 2027, it's going to be new worlds because we're going to be dealing with the hangover of all of these things. We have a Western nation, Great Britain, talking about famine openly. That should give everybody cause for pause instead of shrugging. The point being, a number of these things, a number of these export bubbles are under direct threat. This is an impending problem. We need to understand that Canada and the United States are linked like Siamese twins. We're so attached to one another, and there's no breaking that. The entire Canadian system, as I highlighted, is built upon the back of the U.S. dollar system. Our central bank's reserves are 71% U.S. dollars. But there's more to the story. There's always more to the story. I can put color on the picture as much as I want. Some people will just be like, nah, not you in the audience. But the majority of the Canadian public just doesn't want to admit reality. Reported holders of Canadian government debt. There's the United States leading the way at $122.1 billion Canadian government issuers June 2025. Another chart. Foreign government debt held by Canadian investors. We hold a whole pile of U.S. debt. They hold our bonds. We hold their bonds. But the difference is they have the reserve currency that our entire fiat debt-based system is based on, whereas we are just Canada with our fiat dollar built upon the back of the USD. So, sure, we can... I'll just read from Canada Spends. Foreign holdings of Canadian government debt are dominated by U.S. investors. Inversely, an even higher amount of U.S. government debt leads Canadian investor holdings of foreign government debt by a massive margin. Viral claims of Canadian sell-offs of U.S. Treasury bills in April 2025 in response to tariffs are unsubstantiated. While it's theoretically possible now, doing so comes at the risk of Canadian dollar volatility and realizing losses from an early dump. Look, we can dump treasuries just like Europe can dump treasuries, just like the British can dump treasuries, just like the Japanese can dump treasuries to all try and save themselves. But we're all, once again, on the same ship. We're all flying the same plane, and it would just be jockeying for chairs on jockeying for position and seats on a crashing planer ship or a sinking ship. Pick your metaphor, whatever you want. We can dump U.S. treasuries, they can dump our treasuries, but we're going to lose that battle faster. And in the end, it's just going to cause a lot of destruction for all the little people. And the big players will never miss a meal, and they'll sweep in and they'll buy up what's left when everybody else is destroyed. And then they'll divvy up the country like a nice Thanksgiving turkey. I just want to show you this chart. This is the Canadian U.S. dollar chart. This is where Stephen Harper comes into office. Canadian dollar gets stronger, reaches parity. It was actually stronger than the U.S. dollar. Now it declines through 2008, but there is the low from the big crash of 2008. Remember that? And look where we are now. And supposedly, we're not in a crisis. Supposedly, we're in a position to fight a trade war with a reserve currency we built our whole godforsaken financial system on the back of. We're approaching all-time lows. What happened in 2015? The government that's in office today that has somehow managed to dupe Republican thinking because they swapped out the prime minister. It's not the exact same party. The prime minister, to his credit, is reversing or paring back some of the policy decisions of the government that he leads, or the part, I shouldn't even say that. He leads a completely different government. But the Liberal Party that enabled the government that destroyed the country, again, is the same party underneath him. It's the same structure. It's the same government. But you can see, it's such a clear line trajectory. I don't even think I need to make the point. I'm belaboring things at this point. That's probably why I'm getting a little rambly at the mouth. It's quite simple. Canada cannot afford to fight a trade war. We need to make amends with the United States. That means we're going to have to give up some things that we value and treasure, not to the benefit of the Canadian people, but to the benefit of the cartels that dominate this country. We're going to have to leave more on the table. After we insult them and thumb our noses at them and act like we're superior to them, they're unwilling to send $60 billion a year into our country and keep giving us favorable trade status and keep treating us like a trusted partner when we are littered with security threats and concerns. We couldn't have screwed up more if we tried.